Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, and happy Father's Day to you. This is the pre-celebration. Today's show has to be about dad, right? The dad you know, or the dad you may have never known. Either way, all of us can relate to that part of dad that was hidden from us because he had to be our dad. Lots of dads are like that. At least if you're in your 50s, 40s, those of you with dads had dads that grew up in a generation that taught the parent that the parent was the parent and that the parent had certain obligations and certain roles and that your dad, well, wasn't quite your friend. Some of you can relate especially. That part of dad that he never let you know. Tied into that is the cult of manhood. And manhood and dad have a lot to do with each other. Some of the harsher parts of our relationships with our fathers had to do with their version of manhood. Where they felt comfortable in their manhood, where they may have felt uncomfortable in their manhood. Either way, sometimes the children paid the price, boys and girls. Today, because I'm male, I may talk about it more in terms of how the boys paid the price, and many of the boys out there know what I'm talking about. When dad blew his top, you had to duck. Of course, things have changed today. Today, if dad blows his top, the neighbors call social services, and he has to explain himself, and that's really the way it is today. Good or bad, that's not the way it was when I was a kid. That's not the way it was when you were a kid. Many of us have strong opinions about those changes. At any rate, much of the way dad acted had to do with how he was taught to act as a man. Now, what I want to do with today's show is turn that societal notion, that sociological, historical, theological notion of dad and manhood and the cult of manhood, I want to explore it with you from the standpoint of dad's physiology. There was a science that explained dad. You didn't look at it that way as a kid when you were ducking under the table, of course. But his liver, his gallbladder, his adrenal glands, his testosterone levels, his understanding of his own nervous system, all made dad who dad was. Of course, none of us had any sense of this, especially dad. How many dads went over the top? How many dads were abusive one way or the other? And by golly, had their adrenal glands or their gallbladders cut out? How many gallbladders are taken out each year today? Hundreds and thousands. Maybe this is news to you, not my regular listeners, but when you get your gallbladder taken out, your liver is going to overheat. So here's a correlation. You get that gallbladder taken out because you had a gallstone, because you just went into ER with a gallstone attack, and they figured that's the best thing to do, lest the gallbladder burst in some sort of septicemia. Develop. From that day on, your liver's going to run hot. I'm going to explain what a hot liver is. But a hot liver means a hot temper. And even a nice guy with a hot liver is going to blow his stack every now and then. And by the time dad is 40 or 50 with the pot belly and now the kids are really costing money, well, dad's a batter keg. But we didn't think about that when we were running out the door or ducking under the table. I didn't grow up with a particularly violent dad. I grew up in a very, very, very violent neighborhood, I think. I didn't grow up with a very violent dad, but he knew how to blow his top. And if you asked for trouble, he was going to give it to you. I wouldn't call my dad outrageously violent, not at all. But he was a product of his generation, and if you were out of line, you got the back of his hand, at least until you were big enough. And I think many of us can relate to what I'm saying today. All of this has a lot to do with tomorrow. Tomorrow's Father's Day. Whatever we give our fathers for Father's Day, a visit, a toolbox, whatever we give him, a new gun, whatever it is. Who was that man, and why did he act like he acted? Well, there's a science behind that. Of course, his sense of manhood, like ours, well, all you have to do is look at the movies or read the novels. Who is the hero? And all men really are heroes. They're heroes to their sons. They're heroes to their little girls. To have a father is to look at a child and hope that the child looks in the eye, at least through one phase of development, as my dad was my hero. Well, that's a male thing. He's not going to be heroic running around in a skirt or being afraid to shoot the bear when the bear comes to the settlement and tries to eat the kids. He's the warrior. His job is to show the masculine side. Hopefully appropriate to the situation, right? Dad fails at being masculine when he's aggressive inappropriately. So there has to be an appropriateness to that aggression. There won't be an appropriateness when the gallbladder's gone, when the liver's hot. The liver is the organ that allows the male to dispense with force, or power, I should say, with discretion. Power with discretion. The hero dispenses with power, but adds discretion to it. The appropriate use of force. Clint Eastwood. Now, there is an American hero. Every dad ideally has a little Clint Eastwood in him. Not looking for trouble, but ready to dispense with it if it comes his way. Not being a bully, but God help you if you cross the line. And that's kind of the advice many of us got. That's the advice I got. My father always told me, don't start trouble, but finish it. And when the neighbors banged on my door and wanted to talk to my father because they said, your son is too much of a maniac, the first thing my father would ask me is, did you start it? And I always told the truth. And when I didn't start it, I said, I didn't start it. And he would smile and tell the people to go away. They would see, would say, my son did not start the trouble. He finished it. And that was kind of the code. And I think it was a good code. It was the hero's code. Don't start it, but finish it. And I got that message as early as 4 years old. I grew up in a very violent neighborhood. We fought every single day into our teen years. And by the grace of God, by then, academics was so important. And by the time you're 16 or 17, you're starting to come to the age of reason. And you know that if you continue on that course, well, it's not just going to be fists anymore. It's going to go to other things. Of course, today it's sort of paradoxical, right? Some kids don't know what it is to get smacked, whether in school or at home. Social services is there. We have bully clubs. Perhaps that's good. I won't be the judge, but we have a paradoxical society because while that occurs, while some kids are homeschooled by mama till they're 16 or 18 years old, there are kids growing up in the hood who have to pack to survive their day in the classroom. Now, that's paradoxical. I didn't have to grow up with that. I went to Catholic school, grammar school. You fought on the way to school. You fought after school. You fought at lunchtime. Someone was always getting smacked. And if you weren't getting smacked by your fellow students, you were getting smacked by the nuns. And if you listen to my tone, I'm not really complaining. Honestly, against some of the things I see today, I think it was, well, I don't want to say healthy, but relatively speaking, it was healthy. Today's a mess. That was just an imbalance. And the media, the movies, were always there. you grew up with Sylvester Stallone or James Bond or Arnold Schwarzenegger or Bruce Willis or stars of the 30s and 40s. You were taught to be a man is to appropriate force with discretion. Now, the relationship to the liver. So let's discuss the liver. First of all, in the largest organ of the body, in the sense of just sheer bulk, is the liver. Yes, 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 the skin is a larger organ. Let's forget all that. We're talking about a big fat organ in the upper right quadrant of your abdomen. And throughout the entire expanse of this very thick, yin, blood-filled organ is a mass network of tiny passageways called the bile ducts. Not new to you if you've listened to the show before. And within that mass network of little biliary channels, we call them bile canaliculi, is the job of those ducts to remove all the toxins that the liver pulls out of the blood and dumps into the bile ducts, which all furrow on into the gallbladder, which squirts all the poison out of the body into the intestines and through the feces and out into the sewer system. That's the way it's supposed to go, except one problem. That liver gets stuck. Those bile ducts get clogged. And what that causes is an inflammatory process in the liver, the stage of fibrosis in the liver. Now, this isn't cirrhosis of the liver. This is something everybody's got. Everybody. After puberty, your liver is in varying stages of fibrosis and inflammation. We can back off the pathology and just call that aging, normal aging. Take out the liver of every 70-year-old American, male or female, today. Dissect that liver out, and you will see scar tissue in that organ. Now, how much scar tissue is the point? And generally, there's far more than there needs to be. And generally, as that scar tissue thickens over the decades, as those bile ducts congest over the decades, the liver overheats. It's just simple common sense. It's simple plumbing. It's plumbing 101. If the pipes are backed up, the toilet bowl overflows. That's not complicated. That's what happens to everyone. That's what happened to Dad. Worse yet, if that gallbladder's cut out, then forget it. Then it's fire off the charts. So the American male, the hero, your daddy, your daddy that was taught in the cult of manhood to dispense with force but with discretion in an appropriate way to the pride of the community, becomes imbalanced as that liver begins to scar, and that scarring starts early enough. If you look at the pictures, if you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, if you're driving, of course, just listen to the descriptions. But if you're on the website and you look at pictures of the liver, say picture 8. Stages of liver damage. Fatty liver. Some of you know what that is. Some of you don't. As the liver gets inflamed too chronically, long before it's fibrotic, long before it's cirrhotic, long before they tell you, the liver's enlarging. As it enlarges, finally, the liver builds fat into itself to neutralize the inflammation. Yeah, that's what it does. And you hear, off ultrasound, you've got a fatty liver. Usually this comes with a few other things, a little prediabetes, a little high blood pressure, maybe low thyroid. The liver is in an arc. It's in a pendulum of response to all the other things that are going on in your body. The liver is in reciprocity with your rage. So I'm going to dissect that sentence for you. You see, tomorrow you're going to look at Dad and wonder maybe why he never talked to you the way you wanted him to, why he was always pissed off, why he was inappropriate violent, why he always held it in until he exploded. Now you'll start seeing dad, but you'll start seeing a liver. Welcome to my world. I don't see faces necessarily. I see the totality of organ function. I see hundreds and hundreds of variables operating in reciprocity all at once, changing every second to second throughout a conversation. I see it like that. It's exciting to see it like that. It's dynamic. Certainly, you get to understand people and who they are and why they are what they are. Certainly, we would want to give that understanding to our dad. If you look at picture number 8, there it is, stages of liver damage. The normal liver to the fatty liver to the fibrotic liver to the cirrhotic liver. Once you're moving from fibrosis to cirrhosis, you got big problems. But then there's stages of fattiness. There's stages of inflammation. There's stages of fibrosis. Before that liver gets cirrhotic, it's gone to stage 3, fibrotic. Great thing about the liver is it's a great turnaround organ. You can turn it around even if the gallbladder's been taken out. That's the great thing about it, the divine. Our Lord thought ahead of time. You can even cut out the liver. You can cut out 80% of it, 75% of the liver, and it'll grow back in a year or two. Very few organs can compete with that type of regenerative capacities. So instead of the toolbox, tomorrow, bring your dad a liver gallbladder flush kit. Bring him that wisdom. I surely wish the world would incorporate this stuff. At least our fine country would incorporate this stuff. I'm not being tongue-in-cheek. I'm being dead serious. When you flush the liver, when you flush the gallbladder, you cool your rage. The organ that stores anger, and let's talk about anger for a minute. I was going to say the organ that stores anger is the liver. Each organ stores different emotion. The liver stores anger, whether it's extroverted or introverted anger. The kidneys store fear. The heart stores sadness. You already know this. If you were a little kid and your favorite animal got run over by a car right in front of you, your dog just got mowed down right in front of you, what do you grab? Where do you feel that? You feel that in your heart. You don't feel it down below. You feel it in your heart. And that's the point. Just the vernacular of the culture, just the everyday of society knows that organs store emotion. The heart stores sadness. The lungs store grief. The liver stores anger. The kidneys store fear. Now, the Chinese made these connections a long time ago. If you can, if you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, if you're driving, just listen. When you get home, look it up. But if you turn to picture number 5, in Chinese medicine, they talk about the theory of the 5 elements, and they associate all sorts of traits to the liver. And if you're looking at that picture, picture number 5, and you blow it up, in the green there, you're going to see the liver and gallbladder are the wood element. And the organ that relates to the liver, of course, is anger, as I said. Now, why is that important? Well, here's the point. It's called reciprocity. And we know that word, reciprocal. You can't say that the liver stores anger without saying that anger damages the liver. Whether you're talking about the organ or the emotion, both are in reciprocity with each other. Another good reason to flush that organ. I mean, really flush it. I mean, flush it. Do you know, when I say flush it, people think one or two flushes. The master flush, and so much information about this on my other shows, I'm not getting it into it. But the olive oil flushes for the liver. I'm not talking about one or two. I'm talking by the time you're 50 years old, you need one a month for 2 years. Until you've done somewhere between 20 and 30 master flushes. It's always a crack up when you tell people this. I mean, they look at you like this is just outer space. What's outer space is when you're 60 and you've only done one liver flush, or lest you've never heard of these things. Your family's suffering, your job is suffering, your health is suffering, everyone around you suffering, you're suffering, and you've never heard or done a master flush. You're not acquainted with the significance. That's crazy. Perhaps we're crazy, perhaps society's out of balance, because what we should be doing we think is crazy, and what we do is crazy. Everybody kind of agrees society's flipped, if this week isn't an example of it. I've never been political. I got political a year ago. How about you? I think everyone knows something's really going on now. This isn't conspiratorial. There is something very fundamental changing in our culture. And yes, we should seek peaceful resolution. If you don't come to the table with a liver in check, it's difficult to find discretion in negotiation. So the liver has much to do with anger. Anger and the liver are in reciprocity. Here's one key point. And if you ever wanted to understand your angry dad, understand that the liver and the tendon are just as the liver and anger. The tendon of the body, the fascial system of the body, and the liver and anger all have everything to do with each other. Appropriate dispensation of force demands flexibility. You see this in the cult of the martial arts. And I want you to learn from a comparison here. If you look at our action heroes at the bottom, from Schwarzenegger in Predator, Stallone in Rambo, the Bond characters, whether you're starting with Connery back in the 60s or Daniel Craig 2 years ago, Gerard Butler in 300, or Willis, who spanned the last 25 or 30 years. It doesn't matter who you're talking about. That tradition is not the Kung Fu tradition. That tradition is not the tradition of power over brute force. That is not the tradition that talks about flexibility. This is where we have to learn. This is what makes America great. Absorb what's useful. Bring the concept in. Dad should have been flexible. The gift you give your father tomorrow is a 3-day seminar in the country with yoga. Have him take that leap. Yoga. Yoga is that stuff for 60s. When I boxed in the 80s in the gyms, stretching was for sissies. If you stretched, you were gay. Dancers stretched. Ballerinas stretched. Men don't stretch. If you bent over and stretched, you were called names. I mean, this was the mentality. This mentality prevails today. No one stretches. Or if you stretch wrong. Or if you think you're stretching right, you're still stretching wrong. Dad never stretched. Dad never flushed his liver. As a consequence, Dad may have had his gallbladder cut out. Today's show, Father's Day, the dad you never knew. Why did Dad always fly off the handle? Why did Dad get over the top? There you go. The dad you never knew. Let's keep going. Next one, the adrenals. Now, I want you to look at my good friend, picture 21, Justin Bieber. I think that's him on 21. Good-looking guy. Today's male look, the one you gotta have, the look you gotta have is the Justin Bieber look. And this is very different from the look we used to have. And that's picture 17 there, Dolph Lundgren. The guy with the thick neck and the big jaw and the long chin has been superseded by the GQ, Vanity Fair, cosmopolitan mentality. I'll call it, for lack of a better description, the Justin Bieber look. That heavy pit bull masculine look has been superseded in today's culture by the other look. Now, I may have my personal opinion about it, but my personal opinion is not important. And honestly, I think the whole argument is nonsense in a way. But here's the point. Forget the aesthetics of it. That's the ridiculous part of it. Forget the aesthetics. Here's one fact. Thick necks and big jaws have bigger adrenal glands. Thick necks and big jaws have bigger adrenal glands. Here's the thing. If you look at picture 23 or 24, look at picture 24. Okay? That's a picture of the red pit bull. You ever see a red pit bull? You ever go face to face with a red pit bull? Now go face to face with a French poodle, a giant poodle, or go face to face with an Afghan. I don't mean the person, I mean the dog, an Afghan. Look at the jawline of an Afghan. Look at the width of the jaw on an Afghan or a poodle, and look at the width of the jaw on a pit bull. Which of those two animals do you think has the bigger set of adrenal glands? And I don't have to answer that, right? Obviously, by far, the pit bull. Who has the bigger set of adrenal glands? Dolph Lundgren or Justin Bieber? Now, this isn't about moral superiority. This isn't about anything. This is just, let's not get political or social. Let's just understand something. Let's understand that here's a fact. The bigger that jaw, the bigger and stronger are those adrenal glands. Now, that's important. That's important. Because the hero is the warrior. And whether you're a political warrior or you're actually on the front lines, a warrior is a warrior. And to dispense appropriately, righteously with power, and not to abuse power, is to dispense with it in the face of adversity in a very stable, centered, and calm foundational way. You can't get your feathers ruffled in the beginning of combat, in the middle of combat. You can't. You've got to remain relaxed under pressure. And you're only going to do that with a big set of adrenal glands. Now, you got to understand the wisdom here. You got to understand that a culture that doesn't honor that is a weaker culture. Of course, if you want a side note, it's probably that our culture is rebelling against the brutish patriarch. The fathers that abuse their children, the fathers that abuse their wives, the fathers that have been called to apologize for an inappropriate use of force, perhaps is why the Justin Biebers and those narrow jawlines are being exalted today. Perhaps it was our failure to produce enough heroes that has shifted the culture's stereotype. The ideal male doesn't have that pit bull presentation anymore. We've given up on those. We expect them to be brutish and boorish. And perhaps that's what's brought the shift and this trend. But nonetheless, as a scientist, I speak to you to understand that as the adrenals wither, so does your fortitude under battle. You will lose on whatever table you play. Whether it's a battlefront or a chess game, you will lose to the person with the adrenal strength. Because the adrenals, again, they keep the head cool. They allow you to distinguish in your actions each and every moment. They allow you to distinguish between power and force. Power versus force are very different things. Force implies the inappropriate use of power. Power implies the appropriate use of power. It's a lot to the adrenal glands. Men are taught to get angry. If you're afraid, you get angry. When you play ball, when you box, when you play football, when you play baseball, when you play basketball, when you grow up as an athlete, if you have a coach, if you're gifted or fortunate enough to have a coach who knows his game, sooner or later you will have that discussion between you and your coach about fear. Bases loaded, bottom of the ninth, three balls, two strikes, and you're up at bat. And one more pitch is going to determine a whole lot. Double overtime, basketball. Your team is down by one. You're at the foul line. You got two shots. You can put your team up by one, or you can keep your team down by one. Much is at stake. That's where those adrenal glands kick in. The ability to convert adversity or the fear that comes when you're challenged, that little tingling in your stomach when you're being attacked, challenged, the ability to convert that into dynamic action versus paralysis is a function of the adrenal glands. Don't bet on the guy with the small jaw. He's going to be running. He's going to be fainting. He's going to be ducking. Now, of course, that's not written in stone, okay? If you have a small jaw, well, life has many ways to compensate. But I'm giving you a vantage point today. There are probably as many gutsy, brave, and relentlessly aggressive men with tiny jaws compensating for the big-jawed people who have less to prove. I mean, there's so many ways to spin on this, but here's the bottom line. That jaw, that neck, means a more available supply in greater amounts of the adrenaline or the cortisol, but we're talking adrenaline now, that you need to compete under pressure in a perfect state of calm. You got to factor that in. What male are you looking at? Who was your dad? Was he the guy with the small jaw that needed to overcompensate? Was he the guy with the big jaw that just never learned self-control and duck if he blew up? Was he the big, strong guy, but was gentle? Did he have his physiological systems in balance to execute the cult of manhood respectfully to family, friends, neighbors, colleagues at work? Or was he the out-of-control raging maniac? Was his jawline small? Was his neck thin? Did he not have a gallbladder? And so on and so forth. And this is the way you look at it. Adrenaline. What happens to men as they age? Their adrenals tank. And that's a whole other show. We've done so many shows, had so many conversations about the adrenals. What to do for the adrenals. See, this show, my show, I don't do it like that. I know some of you want me to. This kind of stuff is available on YouTube. Everybody's selling supplements. Most people are selling, well, some people are selling good supplements. Of course, you know my background with Premier Research Labs, a company you can trust. But there are others. But collectively, I don't think it's too hard to get your hands on a good adrenal supplement if you make the attempt to buy intelligently. And I don't think it's too difficult to get on YouTube and to start to look at the myriad of things that the adrenals control and the myriad of factors that destroy good adrenal function. I don't think that's too difficult. I'll get into it a little bit, but No, this show asks you to integrate. What happens to a doctor after the doctor gets all the facts? Well, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where doctors and people that memorize facts begin to distinguish themselves. This is something that happens in schooling. Medical school, chiropractic school, acupuncture school. You have your people that understand how to memorize the facts, and then when it comes to being a clinician, applying knowledge to the benefit of the community, to the benefit of the patient, to the benefit of the client, well, that's an art. That's where the fact finder and the clinician separate themselves from each other. My idea with this show was to give you the clinician's standpoint. And this is why you have to dig in a little deeper. So when you can, especially if this is your first time, or if not, many of you just listen on radio, and that's fine. But if you really want to take it to another level, get to the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. We never stop repeating that because you can learn so much more. Those of you who have listened to the show, and there are many of you over the 5 years, you're starting to see there's this wonderful level of integration of concept. Nutrition health is not about the facts, not about the Cliff Notes version. It's about the integration of concepts. Your father, on Father's Day, the man you sit before tomorrow, might be a dad you never knew because you never understood the dynamics behind how he dispensed with his manhood. Manhood's a big deal. I think it's a big deal today. And what it's made of, well, I've given you two insights. It's made of the liver. It's made of the adrenal gland. The adrenal gland subject to sleep. The adrenal gland subject to your ability to balance the autonomic nervous system. Whether your father was raised, whether you as a father were raised, dealing with a great deal of sadness, grief, fear, whether you were taught to convert all those to anger. I don't get afraid, I just get angry. It's kind of the hero's creed. I'm not afraid, I'm angry. They teach you this in sports. Baseball, basketball, football, doesn't matter. Boxing, MMA, that is what they teach you. It's okay to be afraid, just convert it to force. Convert it to power. Control your fear and use it. So whether you were any of these, whether you were dominant to certain emotions, the worry wart, the angerholic, the guy that's always sad with his head down, looking for mommy to give him a kiss because he's bleeding, whoever you are, all of us had to dialogue with the autonomic nervous system. So we're going to bring in another one, number three, the autonomic nervous system. Did your dad, whether he was puritanical or whether he was just an overt maniac? In other words, was he stoic? Did he keep it all inside? Or did he think nothing about cursing and swearing at the dinner table at the drop of a pin? Either way, was he raised to understand how to deal with his stress, because stress is part of life. Everyone has stress. You know, the Victorian American, the Pilgrim, the Puritan, the classic quintessential New England Pilgrim, although some would argue this, stereotypically was stoic. Your Scandinavians are stoic. Irish English tend to be stoic. And I really wouldn't put it just to those nationalities. Throughout the world, sects of men, through all nationalities, races, colors, creeds, tend to be stoic. Were you like that? Meaning, were you keeping the day's anxieties in? or whether you were screaming and running around, screaming and kvetching at the drop of a pin. Either way, you understood what stress was. The point is, and the point is to understand Dad, is did Dad come from a culture? Did he come from a lineage that understood how to dissolve their stress? Finland. Let's talk about Finland for a minute. I've got this great, I'm going to try to find a way to tie this on to one of my shows, but I've got a 1-hour documentary on Banya, the sauna, hot sauna therapy, and cold water therapy, Banya therapy, as it exists today in the country of Finland, and how central to the culture it is. It's fascinating. Growing up in Brooklyn, we would go to the bar. At 4 o'clock, you get out of work and you go to the bar. You get up at 5, you get to work by 7, you get out by 3, and you go to the bar. And you drink from 4 to 6, you have 2 or 3, you come home, you're with your family, you have dinner. Lots of guys growing up in New York City, all the boroughs. So this is not New York City, this is Boston, this is New York, this is the Northeast, and there's lots of cities like this. Not just in New York, not just in America, in the world. Men with families that work hard hit the local tavern for a couple of drinks before they dwaddle on home to work. Well, in Finland, you don't do that. In Finland, some are going to say you drink in the sauna. No, in Finland, central to the community is banya. It's their way of doing something that has a very powerful effect on their nervous system. Any of you who have done banya saunas, any of you who have done saunas, period, any of you who know the pleasure of sweating it out and then cooling off in water, understand how to balance your nervous system with a tool that's actually built into the culture. It's built into the culture. Did your dad come from a culture where something was built in to calm it down? I mean, we're trying today, right? Yoga. But Dad's 40 years ago didn't go to yoga after work. Dad's 40 years ago, Dad's 50 years ago, Dad's 60 years ago, Dad's 30 years ago didn't know yoga from shmoga. There was no yoga. What has our culture offered us? What have we offered our culture in the name of what truly constitutes a healthy way to go in there and balance the neurological system? That's the autonomic nerves. We should understand the autonomic nerves. Nerves divided into two categories. My regular listeners understand. Sympathetic and parasympathetic nerves, a wiring system that either hypes you up or cools you down. Which one you're going to feed in your life? Which one is the hero going to feed? Under attack, does the hero stress up or cool down? Well, of course, the art of being under attack is to cool down, which means you have to have relationship with your nervous system. Power over force, a perfect example of how to utilize that. Another factor Dad suffered from. Testosterone. Again, testosterone, very reciprocal with the adrenal glands, very hooked in with the adrenals. And testosterone is subject to a large number of variables in the physiology. So look at Dad by the time he's 40. Look at Dad by the time he's 50. Definitely the adrenals are exhausted. The culture fails to give him a way to relax. No banya sauna. You have bar rooms, not banya. The liver's congested. He's been living with it inflamed for years. The adrenals are exhausted, the liver is inflamed, the culture doesn't offer him a way to balance his autonomic nerves, and all of that wreaks havoc on testosterone. His testosterone levels are plummeting. His testosterone levels don't afford him what it affords the head of the pride. All the studies done in nature on the animals that relax most easily are the animals that produce more testosterone. Again, if not abused, the adrenaline promotes the cult of the hero. If not abused, testosterone promotes the cult of the hero. Without enough concentration of both of those hormones, there are no heroes. The culture has to devote itself to distinguishing between the power inherent in that balance versus the inappropriate force when out of balance. It is the liver that balances those hormones. Whether you use your testosterone or your adrenaline correctly is up to the liver. In a sense, well, wait, don't we say this? The liver balances hormone. Of course, testosterone is subject to all sorts of shifts. As you put on weight and become insulin resistant, your testosterone will dip. As you get more stressed, largely because there's less testosterone or less cortisol or less adrenaline, the cortisol will begin to competitively inhibit the testosterone. In other words, above all, the hormone that prevails under stress is cortisol. If you go down to picture number 34, picture number 33 on the website, both those pictures talk about a word that you should understand. That word is competitive inhibition. Under stress, cortisol spikes so high that it impersonates testosterone. In other words, it binds to the receptor sites that testosterone would otherwise bind to. So the testosterone you do produce becomes useless because it can't find a binding site. Now, why is that? Because for every molecule of testosterone, there are 10 molecules of cortisol because you're so stressed. So you sit down tomorrow and you look at Dad and remember the good and the bad. And as much as you humanly can, you forget the bad and focus on the good, because he did his best. Because God's children suffer not for lack of faith very often, but for lack of knowledge. Your father didn't understand this in him, just as you didn't understand it in him, just as you may not understand it in you. And yet it controls the way you appropriate force. One, a functional liver. A functional liver as I define it. Two, adrenal glands with enough oomph to get the job done. Three, a relationship with the autonomic nervous system, lest the cortisol competitively inhibit the entire hormonal package. And four, what will suffer the most, that grows the muscles big, that relaxes the man under pressure, just like the adrenals. The sister of those adrenals, the testes. 714-850-1007, 714-850-1007. That's the number to my office. If you're lost in the labyrinth of help, give us a call. I'll put you on track. See you next week, and above all, happy Father's Day.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.